Hare Krishna. So we'll have a recorded lecture which is presented by His Holiness Radhana Swami.
A reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 4, entitled Gajendra Returns to the Spiritual World. Text 2 through 4. What is being focused on here by Shukadev Goswami and our acharyas is how reversals, even of the most difficult kind, have the potential to be the greatest opportunities in our lives. The nature of material existence, even when we come to the spiritual path, is we are conditioned that things should go our own way. Material existence is a consciousness by which I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am the proprietor, and therefore we very much are accustomed to expect things to go our way. And if they do not go our way, depending on our nature, we may become angry, vengeful, we may fight, or maybe we may give up, become depressed, commit suicide, withdraw from society. These are different ways, among the different ways, that a conditioned soul deals with this emotional crisis that things are not going my way. Now, when we come to spiritual life, we still have our same conditionings. It's not that as soon as we come to the path of bhakti, we're pure. When you go to the hospital, it doesn't mean when you walk in the door you're free from disease. Usually after you walk in the hospital, there's more pain than before you walked in. Yes. I walked into a hospital last week. I was feeling quite good when I walked in. But soon I was on an operating table and they were cutting organs out of me and they were sewing me up, and soon I was laying there and they were asking me how many painkillers I want. A lot of pain, so many restrictions, so many problems. So when you go into a hospital as a patient, you can expect things are going to get worse before they get better, because that's the process of taking out the disease. Restrictions of diet, restrictions of movements. And then you're not even allowed out until they discharge you. Very difficult. So similarly, spiritual life is like coming into a hospital for the heart. And there's going to be a lot of difficulties that we wouldn't have to deal with if we just remained in the diseased condition without trying to help. So one of our conditionings, one of our diseases that we come into spiritual life with is that we expect things to go our way. And we also apply that to our spiritual life. I'm serving Krishna, so this is the way Krishna should deal with me. I've done this many pujas. I've done this many sacrifices. He should make my children scholars. He should make them obedient to me. He should give me good health. In fact, he should give all my family members good health. And my business, of course, because it's for him, it should flourish, it should prosper without any impediments. And as far as my relationships, people should give me the honor and respect I am due for being such a sincere, saintly person. More or less, we all expect like this. But the problem is, if Krishna gave you what you wanted, you probably wouldn't grow much at all. Because bhakti is not about getting. Bhakti is about seeking shelter. You only get Krishna when you seek shelter. You only get Krishna when you give up hope of anything else. If you want other things, that is the karma kanda mentality. You can get other things. But you will not get the goal. So reversals come. And one of the problems is the reversals are not the ones we like. It is our tendency that I know reversals will come, and I know if I take shelter of Krishna in that situation, I'll make advancements. But the reversals, I'll give my list of which reversals are acceptable. But the problem is Krishna has his own list. He'll read your list. But usually what's ever on your list won't work. Definitely what Kunti, the difficulties Kunti Devi got were not on her list. But she thanked Krishna because she understood it was perfect. What appears to be a curse, it's a blessing if we simply appreciate the inner essence of the possibility of how to connect to Krishna in that situation. Therefore, one of Prabhupada's most common and favorite of all verses was from 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord Brahma. Now, because this verse is spoken by Brahma, it's very significant. Because if anyone in this whole creation of this universe would think that he's the controller and he'll get what he expects, it's Brahma. Yes? He's born from Vishnu himself on a lotus flower. There was no afterbirth, or he wasn't crying when he came out. Yes? It was a pleasurable birth. It was an ecstatic birth. Can you imagine in the hospital, all you ladies who've had children, all of a sudden a lotus flower just seamlessly comes out of you and a little baby just starts smiling and appears on that lotus flower. Painless for everybody. Very happy birth. And he was the only son at the time. And he's guaranteed a life of 311 trillion years. Nobody could interfere with that. We don't know if we have 5 minutes. So he has so much, and all the demigods are obeying him. But he's offering this verse. Because ultimately, Krishna completely humiliated Lord Brahma. Not the way Brahma wanted. Krishna, again and again, made Lord Brahma look like a total fool. At times, he absolutely humiliated Brahma in front of all of his children and disciples. And here in Vrindavan, he bewildered Brahma, where Brahma was practically paralyzed with confusion. Although he's a big guru. And then Lord Brahma offers this verse. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipagam kritvapupur virvitadam namaste jivete simukta pade sadaya bhak. One who seeks the compassion of the Lord with folded palms, even in the face of the most difficult possible adversity, seeking the compassion of the Lord, and bows down, thinking, I deserve much worse, but Krishna's just giving me this much, just to help me to turn to him. And if we do this with a grateful heart, dayabak, that means it is our natural inheritance to go back home to the spiritual world, to attain the perfection of liberation. We have to see deeper than what appears. We were discussing this last night, that when you're watching a river on the surface of the river are so many waves. These waves are constantly changing. Some are swirling, some are foaming, some are crashing against each other. And these waves, no wave lasts for more than a few seconds. Same water, but the same water turns into another form of a wave and another form of a wave, and waves are always in a turbulent situation. But if you go deeper, there's a constant current below the waves that's steady and peaceful. So similarly in this world, the situations that come upon us, and even the different phases of our life, everything's just like the waves on the surface of our lifetime. Sometimes we're young and we're healthy. Sometimes we're old and diseased, and we lose our memory and we lose all our power to speak. We lose our power to move. We lose our power to recognize anyone. Sometimes we have cancer. Sometimes we're winning athletic events. Sometimes people love us, sometimes people hate us. It's all just the superficial surface of the waves just moving around, always moving, due to the wind of time. But if we go deeper, we understand I am the eternal soul. I am part of God. And we make that connection between the soul and between our own consciousness and our soul. And we make the connection between the soul and God. And that is constant. Na hanyate hanyamane sarire. For the soul, there's no birth, there's no death. And all of these superficial changes happening on the surface of this life have nothing to do with the soul. The current of truth. But very few people want to go deeper than the superficial appearance of existence. Krishna does to help us. He does it to materialists and he does it to devotees. He does it to everyone, because that's what the material world is supposed to do. Is on that superficial surface level of the waves, sometimes things are really flowing as you like, but other times so much disruption. The purpose of those disruptions is to break us from our complacency and not be satisfied on the surface. To give us a sense of real need to dive deeper, to connect to the constant current of truth. Here we find King Huhu. He's a beautiful king among the Gandharvas. Now, Gandharvas is a very exalted position within the higher realms. They have all the eight mystic cities. They're really mystic yogis. They could practically do anything. They're expert in music and dance. They have wonderful bodily features, long lives, no disease, and he was the most prominent among them. Can you imagine having a life like that? It's very different than living in Mumbai. Mumbai, even if you have a beautiful home, still as soon as you go outside, you have to go through the traffic and people are knocking on your windows. Yes? It's very, whatever pleasure is here is really superficial. But he's living in Gandharva Loka. And he's cursed by Devala Rishi to become a crocodile. Do you know how painful that must have been for him? From being a beautiful king in Gandharva Loka to become a crocodile. Crocodiles are not beautiful. The only person who appreciates a crocodile is another crocodile. And usually they fight. Crocodiles usually... What I've seen of crocodiles, because I've seen them in waters, they're usually alone. They're not very sociable, even with each other. They're usually swimming around alone, always looking for something to eat. Because the tongue is very powerful. The tongue wants to taste. You have that experience. And look at this, just compare the size of your tongue to that of a crocodile. So you can imagine how agitated a crocodile would. We have this little tiny tongue and it's just demanding so much from us. Crocodiles have huge tongues. And every little part of it is demanding food. So they're just hunting, hunting, hunting constantly. So here we find Sukadev Goswami, a self-realized soul, is talking about what a great fortune it was for him to be a crocodile. Because although it was miserable for him for some time, in his complacency of being such a royal, successful controller, it would have taken millions and millions and millions of years at least for him to ever see God. But because of this body of a crocodile, in one life he got to see God. Very special. Some suffering was there, but in one life he got to see God. And he got the perfection of life. Simply because he was connected to Gajendra, who was a dear devotee of the Lord. He said, being a crocodile alone was not enough. But Gajendra, we will discuss his special qualities in a moment. Because he was associating with Gajendra, even in this most strange way, he got perfection of life. Now you may think that when Krishna came, the crocodile would just immediately just be in bliss. Oh, now Krishna's here. No, even after being a crocodile for all this time, when Krishna did come, he added insult to injury. He took a Sudarshan chakra and cut off his mouth. Yes? Crocodiles are very attached to their mouths. Everything. He took away first he made him a crocodile, then as a crocodile, he took away everything. And then at that point, due to his association with Gajendra, who was offering beautiful prayers of love and devotion, King Huhu surrendered. And he actually got relieved of all of his sinful reactions and attained. It says here he went back to the Gandharva Loka, but in the purports it explains he went to the spiritual world. That means internally, even though he went back to Gandharva Loka, he went back as a pure devotee, a Paramhamsa, who was in the spiritual world internally. He attained life's perfection. So really, was that a curse or a blessing? It was the greatest blessing. How does that translate to our own lives? Let us first examine Gajendra. Gajendra was Maharaj Indrajumna, who was living in Dravida Desh. He was a king. And he was so pious that after raising his family and performing his duties perfectly according to Dharma, he retired from family life and went to the Malaya Hills to perform tapasya. How many kings are willing to do that? He grew matted hair, lived in the forest, in a mountain ashram, and absorbed himself in meditation and prayer. That's all he did. Fasting, performing austerities. And one day he was so absorbed in meditation, Agastya Muni happened to come. And Agastya Muni he's quite well known for liking to eat prasad. And hospitality is you offer someone prasad. That's hospitality of every culture in the world. You offer someone a sitting place, sweet words. We make them really feel that we want them there. And then we give them prasad. That's the universal principle of basic human culture. So Agastya Muni came, and Indrajumna Maharaj was just like this, sitting in meditation. So Agastya Muni cursed him. What was the king's fault? He didn't even know that the sage was there. Parikshit Maharaj was cursed too, but he made a little mistake, which didn't warrant the curse to die. He just made a little mistake being under illusion for a few seconds. But Indrajumna Maharaj didn't make any mistake. But he was cursed to become a dumb elephant. Now this is a setback. You've lived your whole life as a king. You only have a few more years to live. You want to perfect it, go back to Godhead. And this is a pretty big setback. Instead of finishing it all off and going back to Godhead, you get cursed by a sage to have a life of an elephant. And then the sage, after cursing him, left. But the most important part of this story, in one sense, is the next part. After the sage left, King Indrajumna, he was happy. He was satisfied because he knew in his heart that nothing happens by chance. If this is the route that the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants me to practice my devotional service, then it is perfect. He was grateful. King Indrajumna was thinking, actually, I deserve so much worse. But Krishna just gave me this little tiny bit. And it will help me, definitely. Because he had that gratitude toward Krishna, because he had that faith, Krishna was so pleased with him that at that point it was arranged he was going back to Godhead. And Krishna orchestrated the whole thing by putting him in the jaws of that crocodile, knowing he would cry out for him with love and devotion at that time and show the whole world the highest example. This is really very much the crux of the story. King Indrajumna Maharaj was not disturbed, but he was grateful for receiving this curse. Major setback in his own spiritual life, but he didn't see it as a setback. He saw it as an opportunity that was not the way he expected. It was not the way he planned it, but he understood the wisdom of the Lord, and it was perfect. So in our lives, reversals come. Materialistic people, reversals come. Devotees, reversals come. And they won't be what we want. Someone may get a disease. We have seen it. We have seen among our own devotees. Maharaj Huhu, it would have taken him millions of years to go back to Godhead. But because of this impediment, because of this reversal, one life. So similarly, devotees we have seen get terminal diseases. And of course, you have the choice. When Krishna gives you mercy, still you have the choice to accept it, to tena kampam sukh samikshamano, or to fight against it, or to blame Krishna for it. You can blame Krishna or you can thank Krishna. Either one is good. First class is thanking Krishna. Second class is blaming Krishna. Third class is deciding Krishna doesn't exist. Otherwise, if he existed, he would not do this to me. And sometimes people blame Krishna for a while, but then they thank Krishna after some time. They make some progress. But here we find that, you know, some devotees, they get a disease, and then they really surrender to Krishna. Yesterday morning I met Stoka Krishna's daughter and I was remembering him. It may have taken him a few lifetimes to go back to Godhead, but when he had cancer, he was smiling. At the beginning it was confusing, but after he accepted it and just really accepted it in his heart and Krishna's mercy and turned to him, within a few months he saw Krishna. So is that a curse or a blessing? You're going to die anyway in a few years. Physically. But you transformed a curse into a blessing. And then relatives of somebody who dies. Very difficult. That person may have gone back to Godhead. What's the problem for them? Devotee, we see, devotee goes back to Godhead. They go through some crisis. They die, they go back to Godhead. We see, we know. They're being either going back to Godhead or being elevated very close in that direction because of their consciousness. That's something that we can visibly understand. So then for the relatives, why? Why did this happen to me? The father, the mother, the husband, the wife, the child has been blessed in a very, very special, special way. But it's painful. Not painful, it's painful for them while they're going through it, but then they're liberated. But it's painful for us after they're liberated. As long as we're just stuck on the superficial level of the waves, we're just seeing how the waves are moving. But if we go down deeper, we understand that we're going to lose everything eventually of this world. But if only we're just grateful to Krishna, and we turn to Krishna in our sorrow, turn to Krishna in our desperation, one of the reasons it's hurt so much is it's not what we expected when we came to Krishna consciousness. This is hard. Because we're expecting chant and be happy. And it's true, you will be happy. But what type of happiness? Krishna doesn't want to give you happiness on just the wave happiness. You'll get some of that too. There'll be nice prasad, nice kirtans, sometimes nice friendships, a lot of happiness in the waves. But to go deeper, Krishna does something. He makes things happen that is not what we want and not what we expected. Sometimes devotees think, if I knew I had to go through this, I would have never joined this movement. That's why Krishna concealed these things from you at the beginning. You can't understand the 10th canto till you go through the first 9 cantos. So Krishna reveals what it takes to bring you back to Godhead when you're, you know, after he gives you some of that happiness and bliss of being a devotee. But this is the cause of so much suffering and pain, and it's one of the greatest impediments to our spiritual progress, is this conditioning of expecting things to go our way, even in our spiritual life. Rupa Goswami says we should always be expecting Krishna's mercy. That we should expect. But his mercy is different than what goes on in our mind. Krishna said, sometimes when I give my first installment of my supreme mercy, I take everything away. So that we really understand the raw truth of material existence and simultaneously understand that the mercy of God is always there if you go deeper down. Even world wars are just rippling waves on the surface of material existence. Even the dropping of nuclear bombs, they're just, you know, little bigger waves. But none of them can disturb the truth if we just go a little down. Srila Prabhupada explains when he was in Calcutta and the Japanese were bombing the city. People were in panic, running helter-skelter in all directions. And Prabhupada was happy. He was sad to see people suffering. On the surface part, he was very, very sad and compassionate for everybody's suffering. But deeper down, he was thinking that Krishna has come in the form of these bombs. What does that mean? If I just remember him, it's instant. If I just remember him when the bomb comes, it's an instant ticket back home, back to Godhead. It's much easier than dealing with all family problems for the next 40 years and disappointments of your children and your wife and husband are not living up to your expectations and bills and too much heat and too much drought and too much rain and then old age and then disease. Life is difficult. But here it is. And you're a gopi. Making garlands with Radharani. It's a good bomb. If you're remembering Krishna, chanting his name, and the bomb comes, that's what happens. It's beautiful. But we can't appreciate that unless we go below the surface. Because all around us, it looks like total ghastliness. Yes? But actually, every single person there can go back to Godhead in a moment. So yes, the world is not going to be what we expect it to be. But those are the best times when things, the more they go against what we want, are the best opportunities for us to connect to Krishna. If we just make that choice, we shouldn't be stuck in our own routine of judging things in a certain way. By our own free will, we have to break out of that mold. And that's what all these stories of Srimad Bhagavatam are telling us. Almost every major story of the Srimad Bhagavatam is built on the foundation of major crisis. Why is it like that? Why isn't it just beautiful stories of peace and love and happiness and prosperity and everything going your way? Is there any story like that in the Bhagavatam? Is there any story like that in Ramayana or Mahabharata? Was Bhagavad Gita spoken in that setting? Why? Because it's the reality of what it takes. And not only in Hindu religion, but in every religion. Every religion, we find the very basis, the foundation, is reversals. The Old Testament. All the children of God, Abraham, they were slaves living in Egypt for generations, doing hard labor, getting whipped and beaten. They were literally slaves, generation after generation. And finally, after great difficult efforts. They escaped from being slaves, and they all lived in the wilderness for 40 years. And everybody who escaped from slavery, they lived and died in the wilderness, and they were all supposed to go to the promised land, and none of them made it. They all died in the wilderness. And then when they finally, their descendants made it to the promised land, there was other people living there. And there was war after war after war. Peace and love. And that's the history. And Christians, Lord Jesus was a self-realized Jewish man who preached the basis of their religion, but he did it according to time, place, and circumstance, trying to find the essence and present that. Was he popular? He was tortured. He was crucified. He was persecuted. And then every single one of his followers were hunted down, persecuted, killed, tortured, or living like hiding. Very difficult. And Islam, so many wars, so many battles, escaping, so much persecution. The Parsis driven out of their own country and becoming refugees in a foreign land. Why? Why are not religions just really sweet storybooks? Now, if we read about Goloka Vrindavan, it's a really sweet book where everything's nice. But here, when Krishna descends to the world, there was a demon coming every day, even in Gokula Vrindavan. Yes? Putana comes, Trinakar, Trinavarta, Agasura, Keshi, Aristasura, Vatsasura, Pralambasura, Denukasura, Bakasura, blazing forest fires, Kaliya. And every time they came, it made the devotees more dependent on Krishna. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the beginning cantos, Gajendra, Prahlad, Dhruva, Ambarish, the Pandavas, all based on the setting of crisis. And each of these great souls taught us how to turn to God in that situation with a grateful heart. But even more important, in each situation we find how God loves his devotees and is there for them when we really turn to him. The story of Gajendra Moksha is one of the most important stories for our practical spiritual life. Because we are all in the crocodile of material existence. And the jaws of that crocodile are very strong. And we cannot escape on our own. However strong, intelligent, wealthy, powerful we are, no material arrangement brings real happiness. Maya's illusion feels if you become wealthy, you'll be happy. But historically, we see that the general tendency of people who become wealthy is they become isolated. And they hardly have any real friends. That's the truth about most people who become wealthy and famous. There are exceptions, but that is the tendency. Your whole life is so superficial. you really don't have real brothers and sisters. Everything's just based on superficial or interactions, either for cheap enjoyment or just to get things done. But it's hard to have deep relations. The reason is because the more you're controlling, the more you become addicted and conditioned to this controlling spirit. You want to control everything and everyone. And you can't have a deep relationship as long as you feel you're controlling. So there's very little love for people who are extremely successful. It's always been that way. The only way they can be is if you really take a humble position. And really accept people as your equals. So here's the promise. People are fighting, fighting, fighting to get there. And then when they get there, they can't give up what they have. But at the same time, it's a very lonely and unsatisfying life. So Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to break through the misconception of this type of dream for happiness. That is why Srila Prabhupada was so strong when he spoke, there's really no happiness in the material world. All the so-called happiness is just on the level of these ever-changing waves and foaming bubbles. In the first canto, Prabhupada says that all of our happiness, all of our possessions, all of our relationships in this world are like from foaming bubbles on the surface of the ocean of material existence, and all these bubbles at any moment will burst into oblivion. So are we going to be attached to the bubbles? Are we going to be attached to the depth of what's deeper in the ocean? Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu. Deeper down, there's an ocean of Krishna's mercy, Krishna's kindness, Krishna's love. That's where we want to dive deep. The entire ocean is Krishna's love. But we're attached to the foaming bubbles. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Mahaprabhu says, wake up, sleeping souls. Now usually waking up means to get us out of the sleep, and it's disruptive. Just like if you're having a really sound sleep and the alarm clock rings, what's your first reaction? You don't have to say it publicly. But the first reaction is just, it's a disturbance, is it not? You're sleeping and you're dreaming that you're having a vacation with your lover on a tropical island. And all of a sudden, today there's so many alarm clocks. It's different bells all of a sudden. And you just like turn it off. It's disruptive, but it woke you up. Yes? So the problems in this world are like alarm clocks. The reversals and difficulties. Because when things just keep going our way, we just stay in our dream. Yes, we stay asleep. Maybe a good dream, maybe a bad dream. But when reversals come, it's like an alarm clock to wake us up.